Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today, here on the Karajanian Systems program, World Radio Magazine for the month of August 2009. World Radio was published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This is an online radio version at this point in time. The recordings are production of the Karajanian System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams can be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@carriage.org. Handy Ham, always one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, at Courage, C-O-U-R-A-G-E, .org. Handy Ham at Courage.org. Our website, a very fine website, well-made and very easy to work, www.handyham.org. Again, my name is Bob Zeta. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Let's begin with World Radio Online News Front. Click to texting using Morse code. Texting addicts will soon have a new plaything, but will need to learn CW to use it. This, as Toshiba teams up with microprocessor manufacturer Intel to produce Click, C-L-I-Q-U-E. This is described as a handheld, thumb-operated communications device that uses only three keys to produce Morse code for sending text messages. A Toshiba spokesperson says that Morse was chosen as a communication medium because it is an easily learned and easily suited to the single-digit platform. She explained that the Morse code has been in use for more than 160 years, which is actually longer than any other electronic encoding system. Earlier attempts to create a Morse-based texting device were stymied by the variable length of the Morse characters, which made it hard to adapt to automated text conversion circuits. Toshiba's solution is the three keys. One is used for dots, another for dashes, and the third that acts as a space bar between letters. One tap separates letters while two taps go between words. First released in Japan at the 2008 Microprocessor Forum, the Click is the size and shape of a lollipop with the handle acting as a miniature joystick. Its reception in Japan has been described as fast and furious as early adapters added Click to their army of handheld communications devices. The Click is not yet available in the United States, but there'll be more information about it when it becomes available. Three new handband CubeSats launched. Three small CubeSats carrying amateur radio transmitters were among five satellites launched successfully in late May from NASA's Mid-Atlantic Spaceport on Wallops Island, Virginia. An Air Force satellite was the primary load, and a fourth CubeSat did not carry a transmitter on amateur frequencies. According to the AMPSAT news service, the three satellites carrying ham band transmitters, all operating on 437 megahertz, are PharmaSat-1, launched by NASA and Stanford University, CP-6 from California Polytech's Nate University, that's Cal Poly, and HawkSat-1 from the Hawk Institute for Space Sciences. At press time, none of the sponsors had requested or received Oscar numbers for the satellites. FCC getting tougher with power companies. Nearly 3 years after first contacting Duke Energy about interference complaints from a ham in Cincinnati, Ohio, the FCC is starting to lose patience with the utility. In a May 4 letter to the company, Special Counsel Laura Smith recounted the exchanges of correspondence and promises of action, but pointed out that the problem persists. She even noted that the complainant had gone out on his own and noted the specific locations of several possible noise sources. Quoting, "Given the fact that this case has been ongoing for quite some time without resolution," Smith wrote, you are directed to respond to the undersigned within 30 days, detailing what steps you have taken to resolve the interference. In addition, she told the company that if the problems persist for more than 60 days, quoting again, Duke Energy will be required to provide the FCC with a status update every 2 weeks. Continuing to quote, Duke Energy will be required to provide the FCC with a status update every 2 weeks going forward as to what progress, if any, has been made to resolve the matter. President Obama says to be prepared. United States President Barack Obama has urged residents of hurricane-inclined areas to take responsibility for their own safety and start planning now. Following a disaster preparedness briefing at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the president said that individuals should have a supply of non-perishable food, water, and first aid kits in case they need to wait out an emergency that might hit their area. He added that it is also essential to have at least one waterproof radio. At his press briefing, the president noted that state governments have a primary responsibility for preparing for and responding to disasters. However, he added that all the resources of the federal government is there to back them up. This was supplied through published news reports. Cirque du Soleil founder to visit ISS. The British Broadcasting Company reports that the founder of the performance group Cirque du Soleil will visit the International Space Station in September. According to the news service, 49-year-old Guy Laliberté will travel to the ISS on a Russian Soyuz transport vehicle. Laliberté's trip to the International Space Station is estimated to cost at least $25 million. The Quebec-based millionaire will become the seventh private citizen to visit the orbital outpost since April 2001. No word yet if he plans to obtain an amateur license and operate from space, as all past space adventurers have. And for those of you who do not know what Cirque du Soleil means, it's French for Circus of the Sun. You can read about the full BBC news story at their website, www.bbc.co.uk. That was filed by Southgate. One more World Radio Online news piece. WE1I on the air, 6 meter AM. If you have an old 6-meter Gonset communicator, Clegg 99, or rather ancient 6-meter AM transmitter and a crystal for 50.4 megahertz, then you might want to dust it off and fire it up. This is because Graham Welch, called WE5I, wants to talk to you using good old-fashioned full carrier AM amplitude modulation. During the summer 6-meter DX season, Graham, who lives in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, is on 50.4 daily from Grid Square EM15. He is listening for callers who want to take the time to talk with Middle America on the magic band using AM. He is also posting his operating schedule on the W6YX VHF reflector, and says that even if you do not hear him first, to call him anyway. He just might be listening and waiting to hear your call. We thank the VHF reflector for that information. Let's go now to the editor's log. The editor of World Radio is Nancy Cott, K-O-T-T. Her call is Whiskey Zulu 8 Charlie, W-C-8-C. We're picking up a trend that ham radio is taking it to the streets and campgrounds, boats, bikes, just about everywhere you can tote a solar panel or a battery. The mode doesn't seem to matter. People are operating portable using both code and voice, although code does appear to be more prevalent because it gives more bang for the buck and requires lower power. With a rare occasional exception of a request pertaining to their specialty, our columnists have free rein to write about whatever they want. It is a coincidence that several of our columnists chose to write about the operating mobile and portable this month. We hope you're inspired to try operating portable, even if it is from your backyard. It is a way to get your kids and grandkids involved. If you set up a tent in your yard with a rig inside, to keep it simple, you can even run an extension cord from the house, you know. You can bet the kids will be intrigued. This is also special event season, especially in the northern parts of the country. Not everyone is lucky enough to live in an area with an active local club, but don't let that limit you. A special event station can celebrate or commemorate just about anything. In a rural area, there are centennial farms, local harvest festivals start in September, tractor shows, state and local fairs. You are only limited by your imagination. Again, keep it simple, especially if you don't have the benefit of the assistance of a local club. All hams should know how to set up a simple emergency station, which is a variation of operating portable. A special event station or backyard setup is a good way to learn to do this. Take advantage of the nice weather and get out there and ham it up. I'm happy to report that there appears to be renewed interest in Morse code. The change in the band plan has given over 384,000 novices, techs, both code-tested and non-code-tested, privileges on 15, 40, and 80 meters in the CW-only parts of the band. Novice and techs I spoke with in Dayton last May expressed an interest in learning and improving their code skills so they can take advantage of this band space. Many are interested in the ARRL Triple Play Awards, and they want to get all 50 states on CW. To help these hams upgrade and enjoy more operating room, Chuck Adams, called K7QO, has made a disk of MP3 files containing the entire general written test question pool sent in Morse code. It is not a beginner course. It starts at about 10 words per minute and gradually increases in speed every 4 or 5 hours of the question pool questions. If you're just getting started, you might be interested in the K7QO Basic Code course. Both of these discs are available free. To get your copy, send $1 per disc to Cover Postage and Mailing Envelope to FISTS, F-I-S-T-S. P.O. Box 47, Hadley, Michigan, H-A-D-L-E-Y, Michigan, M-I, zip code 48440. Please include a label with your address written on it and specify which disk you are requesting. Join in on the fun of operating portable using Morse code. It not only provides experience that will be necessary in an emergency, but will give you a new mode to try. Hope to see you on the air. It's signed 73-88-33, Nancy Cott, WZ8C. As our first selection for reading World Radio Online for August of 2009, let's go with the Handy Hams. The title, We Want Our Morse Code, by Avery Finn, call K0HLA, Handy Ham Education Coordinator. Avery may be reached at avery.finn@carriagecenter.org, Carriage Center, one word. In my capacity as education coordinator at Handy Hams, I take a lot of phone calls about every aspect of amateur radio and how it relates to people with disabilities. Last week, I had two from people going for their general class licenses. There's nothing unusual in that, except they mention that after they get their upgrades, they plan to work the International Morse Code. Why? Because they think it might come in handy to know at some time in the future. They also feel that it would be a fun mode of operation. I notice more and more people are enjoying the process of learning the code and using it on the air now that the requirement has been removed. The phone bands can be very crowded at times, and it can be hard to find a clear spot. On CW, there always seems to be a place on the band clear enough for a couple of stations to enjoy a nice QSO and not have interference from other stations. In case you didn't guess, operation on CW is a little bit more private, and fewer people will be listening in. Unless you are working a rare DX station, there won't be much interference, as experienced operators can copy in their heads 4 or 5 levels down just by noticing the difference in pitch of the station. Newer rigs have excellent filters, so you can only hear the one station you want to copy. With CW, you can get by with a lot less power than you would need for a phone contact. Many times you will find stations on CW that hardly ever get on the phone bands, so that is the only way to work them. What about CW nets, you say? Well, there are several around, and many still in operation for traffic handling. The CW nets have their own system of queue signals you should get used to before you check into a net, or at least have a copy handy you can refer to. It could be embarrassing if the net control used one and you didn't know how to respond. I would like to recommend the Handyham Slow Speed CW net Friday mornings on 7.112 MHz. 7.112 MHz. Net control is in the East Coast, so some of us west of the mighty Mississippi might have a problem hearing them sometimes. The International Morse Code Group, known as FISTS, F-I-S-T-S, has a whole page of CW nets listed on its web page, which is www.fists.org. Okay, so what if you have not tried CW because you were afraid of your slower speed? Do not worry about it, as there is an unwritten agreement that the other operator should go at whatever speed you do. If you use a bug or an electronic gear, it is very easy to speed up without realizing it, and it can be a little embarrassing to have to ask the other person to QRS. Now, please slow down in queue signals. In case you are wondering, QRQ is please speed up, which, with a bit of practice enjoying CW context, you may get to use one day. You can reach Handyhams at Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, two words, Minnesota, MN 55422. Or you can dial our 800 number at 1-866-426-3442. Toll free. And we have a great website at www.handyham.org. So I thank you, Avery, for your commentary with the Handyhams titled We Want Our Morse Code. Again, Avery Finn, K0HLA, is the Handyham Education Coordinator. Our next piece is in the category of promotion and recruitment. Summertime and the promoting is easy. The author is Devere, D-D-E-E, Logan, W-1-H-E-O. We're into the good old summertime, the season when enjoying outdoor fun and the sun is the thing to do. While promoting our amateur radio hobby isn't seasonal, summer does present many special opportunities where it can shine. Among the more popular events where ham radio can be on display are fairs, festivals, youth camps, scout camps, parades, walkathons, bikeathons, picnics, and much more. Field Day, of course, offers wonderful opportunities to showcase hams in action, emphasizing a most important public benefit, emergency communications. We trust that your radio club took advantage of this annual event by inviting local officials, police, and fire department personnel to visit your site. Community events and activities provide lots of promotional potential. Where does ham radio fit in? Let us count the ways. First and foremost are displays and demonstrations. A booth at a fair, for example, could include an operating station, displays, and literature introducing ham radio in your radio club, plus friendly hams to answer questions for the public. Even a mobile station could be parked in a well-trafficked area with signs, banners, and a display alongside. Well, some event sponsors require a fee for display space. Others may offer them free to nonprofits such as radio clubs after hearing about the emergency communications they can provide as a public service. Part of your approach could be to offer some communication assistance for the event itself. Walkathons and parades are ideal for demonstrating how radio hams can be of great help while making us very visible to the public. One such event is held annually in Lake County, Ohio. Mike Goffos, a WBAZGH, the ARIS coordinator, reports that the area's multiple sclerosis walk involves amateur radio operators in this yearly fundraising event that attracts 600 to 700 participants. Quotation here, "Our role is to position operators at various checkpoints on the course where we can transmit radio updates, report medical emergencies, and take care of logistics, such as the status of water stops or supplies," he said. "We also shadow the director of the walk, and we pass along status checks from the field. Radio operators usually wear amateur radio identification, including printed shirts, jackets, or ID patches and logos that help distinguish hams among event staffers. It's also a good idea to provide the organizers of events with an advanced written background summary on amateur radio and its role in the event so that publicity by the sponsors can include a mention of ham participation. Summertime is also camping time for Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, YMCA and YWCA groups. They provide great opportunities to get out of our shacks and take portable radios into the great out of doors. HDs, that's the handy talkies, QRP rigs, the low power rigs, and various other pieces of lightweight, portable, battery operated gear are ideal for demonstrations in remote areas far removed from conventional electricity sources. Scouts certainly represent a logistical target audience for hams. The Boy Scout Radio Merit Badge is one way to introduce young people to our hobby and possibly entice them to consider getting a license. Gary Wilson, K2GW, has a terrific website with information on the Radio Merit Badge and how radio amateurs can get involved in the program. You can check that out at http://k2gw.tripod.com/radio-merit-badge. I'll try that one in more plain English for you folks. It's at www.k2gw.tripod, that's spelled TRIPOD.com/radio-meter-badge, one word. Even shopping malls and their parking lots can serve as perfect spots to locate a ham radio demonstration. While some mall operators charge organizations for inside space, an outdoor locale near a mall entrance might be arranged at no charge. Shopping centers generate a lot of foot traffic, which can present hams with a sizable potential audience. The Orange County NC Radio Amateurs set up a demonstration station in a parking lot of a local bank. Raymond Woody Woodworth, called K3VSA, says that the security officer of the bank is a ham, which helped. Quoting, another organization was scheduled to hold a bake sale there but didn't show up, so we had it all to ourselves. Next time, we'll bring our own baked goods to sell, which will help the club's treasury. Before summer fades into fall, clubs should have developed their promotion plans and turned them into actions, no matter how modest. Yes, turning good intentions into results is sometimes difficult, so we're providing an incentive for your club to get moving. Radio clubs that conduct promotional activities during the year 2009 are invited to apply for a Golden Megaphone Award. This new awards program is designed to encourage radio clubs and organizations, such as Hamfest committees, to actively promote amateur radio in their areas. Individuals are not eligible. Winners will be announced nationally in World Radio Online and other publications. Here's how it works. As your group conducts various promotional activities, document them with photos, letters, press write-ups, etc. At the end of the year, submit your application and materials with an official entry blank to the judging committee. The address will be on the entry form. Awards will be given for the best overall promotion program, best individual promotional event, best targeted promotion, and best club-developed promotional materials. Deadline for entries will be January 31, 2010. That's next year, folks. Entry forms are available from World Radio Online and the Ham Radio Promotion Project and should accompany materials documenting activities. Judging will be done by an independent panel of communications professionals. Winners will be announced in World Radio Online during the first quarter of 2010. We hope that your group will become radioactive and step up your 2009 promotion efforts. An important benefit could be more new members for your club. The most important payoff is helping to build our amateur radio service and ensuring its future. What do you do with your old radio magazines? Sure, you can go green and recycle them, but how about using them as publicity tools before recycling? It occurred to me as I sat in a doctor's or a dentist's waiting room that leaving copies of Ham magazines would be a cool idea. Certainly better than those year-old magazines. We should get permission, of course. You could cover up the printed address labels with the radio club contact number or website. Maybe even insert a short description of Ham Radio and your radio club's meeting information inside the magazine. There must be a lot of possible uses for our magazines, so let us know your ideas. We've used them as handouts during ham radio presentations, and you can probably come up with a few more uses. Until next time, please send us updates on your activities and check out the Ham Radio Promotion Project website. It's www.neoham.org. www.neoham.org. My email is, my name, D. Logan. I'll start. D-E-L-O-G-A-N at ameritech.net. A-M-E-R-I-T-E-C-H.net. So it's D. Logan at ameritech.net. And photos are welcome via regular mail. They can be sent to 9901. 9901 Cypress Circle, Mentor, M-E-N-T-O-R, Ohio, O-H, 44060. Now, for the listener, if you're interested in that deadline for entries to the World Radio Online and the Ham Radio Promotional Project, I would suppose that you could use D. Logan's address at 9901 Cypress Circle, Mentor, Ohio, 44060 address to request them. It doesn't say specifically where to get those forms, but the online address or her mailing address ought to be the trick. Devere D. Logan, W-N-H-E-O, is a professional public relations counselor and writer who has been an active radio amateur for 45 years. Well, I think I'll change pace now and go to DX World. DXing 101. The author is Kelly Jones, call and 0VD, November 0, Victor Delta. But before I actually start the article, I'll tell you a bit about what DXing is. That's Delta X-ray. DXing is the art of playing with amateur radio frequencies, with a license, of course, but speaking to people outside of the contiguous United States. In other words, if you're in Boston or in Minneapolis, and you actually talk to someone in Alaska, even though that's an American state, it's going to be considered DX because it's not one of the 48 connected states. Hi. Let's start the article by Kelly Jones. As has been traditional for the past several years, the August DX World is where I typically provide a recap of the Dayton Hamvention. And while there were great presentations at this year's DX Forum, I thought I would take a left turn and skip tradition. Let me explain. In late 2008, I had the honor of being asked to be a forum speaker at the ARRL Rocky Mountain Division Conference, HamCon 2009. This event, interesting enough, was scheduled just 2 weeks after Dayton on May 29 through 31. The conference was also scheduled during the same weekend as the CQWPX CW contest. If you've been a reader of this column, you know that I am a sometimes contester. And with WPX being one of the major DX contests, I had to give this some thought. about 3 seconds worth, anyway. Of course, I accepted the invitation. So this year, instead of doing a recap of Dayton, I thought it might be worthwhile to provide a recap of what I called DXing 101. The forum was put together with the beginning or casual DXer in mind. Topics covered a wide spectrum, ranging from working DX from a postage-sized lot to being on the other side of the pileup. It also touched on various tools that can be added to your DXing toolbox, such as computer logging, DX clusters, grade line, and other propagation factors. In addition, we covered tips and tricks that can help get you closer to the front of the line. These included techniques for working split and understanding the pileup's rhythm. Let's take a look at a few topics that will help you get started with your DXing career. What is needed to work DX? Oftentimes, when one thinks of working DX, the first vision that comes to mind is a field full of tall towers and big antennas. It's no secret that the bigger the antenna, the quicker, usually, you'll get into the DX station's log. However, very modest antennas, such as wires and verticals, can put DX root in a basket. For example, during the first couple of years of my college life, I spent time operating from my 11th floor dorm window. The trickiest part of setting up a shack in the dorm was figuring out a way to get some type of antenna fed to the outside. I noticed that once upon a time the windows in the high rise could be opened, but at some point all of them had been sealed shut with non-reversible screws. With a little ingenuity, a way was found that allowed a flat piece twin lead to be squeezed to the outside. A single strand taken from a 6-strand 22-gauge wire, this had to be a mega stealth antenna, you know, was tossed outside and tied off in the trees around the corner. To this day, I distinctly remember working my first JW contact, MAT, JW5NM. From this dorm room. In addition to wires, verticals are another option for space-limited or budget-conscious DXing. My first real antenna was a butternut HF6V. I still have one of these planted in the yard, and it still catches some nice DX. During the conference, I pointed out that the W1AW Slant Zero station, which was sacked from the main convention center, was using a simple vertical in the courtyard. And with the WPX contest coinciding with the conference, it would be a very easy thing to pick up some nice DX stations. Interestingly enough, I later noticed several forum attendees trying their hand on HF at W1AW Slant Zero. If you're in a restricted neighborhood or simply want to try DXing on a budget, being creative with wires and verticals will not only get you on the air, but will also get you well on the way to catching some great DX. One of the most useful tools, and most polarizing among DXers, is the DX cluster. In layman's terms, a DX cluster is a network of computers that pass DX information between them. In the early days, these were called packet clusters, as most everyone connected to them via 2-meter packet. At the time, the clusters were primarily linked via RF, radio frequency, and not always very reliable. However, in the late 90s, many cluster operators began linking them together through the Internet. This is when their use really began to take off. Today, almost every computer logging program on the market allows you to connect to the cluster network via the Internet. DX clusters are very useful because, in essence, you have ears from around the world. Instead of having to continuously spin the dial looking for the DX on your own, the DX is spotted by other DXs, alerting someone connected to the cluster network. And this is where the controversy comes into play. Instead of having to find a DX station for yourself, somebody else is doing it for you. While I can understand this sentiment, I'm still a big proponent of DX clusters and have been using them since 1994. Computer logging is another great tool on many levels. If your logging program is connected to the DX cluster network, it can compare each incoming spot against your logbook and alert you when a new one comes up. You can also get a visual representation of the spots as they are compared to your log. You can see if you need a DX station on a certain mode or band. This is particularly useful as you begin chasing awards. If you have ever tried to figure out whether or not you qualify for an award by looking at a paper log, you know it's a pretty painful experience. However, with computer logging and a click or two, you can instantly know if you qualify for DXCC, WAS, WAZ, that's 100 DX stations, worked all states, or worked all zones, or any number of other awards. The ionosphere is our best friend, in addition to sunspots, of course. Without the help of the ionosphere, there would be almost no DXing as we know it. The ionosphere is broken down into four layers, D, E, F1, and F2. During the day, solar radiation causes ionization to form distinct layers. The layer closest to the Earth is called the D layer. However, it generally does not reflect signals, but it does absorb some of the energy. Thus, the D layer is often called the absorption layer. Higher up in the ionosphere, we find the E and F layers. These layers do reflect the signals back to Earth, and this is exactly what causes skip propagation and enables us to chase those DX stations. Now, what about gray line? One of the most interesting phenomena is gray line propagation. This is the time between sunset and darkness, or darkness and sunrise. During this time of twilight, the D layer suddenly causes little absorption to signals passing through it, while the E and F layers are still being ionized by sunlight. This makes for about 45 to 60 minutes of interesting operating. There is almost no signal attenuation, but the MUF, that's the maximum usable frequency, is still very high, so long-distance DX is still possible. However, when the sun quits illuminating the E and F layers, the MUF can drop dramatically, sometimes with only a few minutes of warning. One other advantage of grayline DX is that your signals tend to reflect off the edge of the ionized portion of the upper layers. This means propagation will often be in a southerly direction, bouncing along the shadow or terminator between sunlight and darkness. This is good for working into South America and the South Pacific from the United States. Your signals can also bounce northward along the terminator, bending around the pole and down the morning terminator across Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and into Africa, depending on the time of the year. This affords an opportunity to work portions of the world not usually accessible during the day, when propagation tends to be more in an east-west direction. Of course, as you become familiar with the low bands, those are the 40, 80, and 160 meter bands, you'll find the gray line plays a major role in the DX capabilities of those bands. One of the most common techniques used by DX expeditions is to operate split. This means the DX station is transmitting on one frequency and listening on another. So as you tune around the band and find a DX station calling CQ, listen before answering. If you hear the DX station working, guys, but you don't hear the pilot, there is a good chance he is not listening on his transmit frequency. A typical rule of thumb for split operation is to listen up 5 to 10 kilohertz on single sideband and 1 to 2 kilohertz on CW. Listen up means to move up the frequency higher, not listen down, in other words. However, if the DX station is a good operator, he will tell you where he's listening, or say up, after every few QSOs. A pilot will often have a rhythm. Notice how the DX station exchanges calls, signal reports, and finally indicates it's okay to call. Some DX will say QRZ, that's QRZ, indicating it's okay to call. Others will simply say thank you or something similar. Learn the operator's techniques, and you'll be one step ahead in getting into his log. Another tip to consider is that if the DX only gets a partial call, he may ask, who's the Bravo Victor, BV? If your call does not contain Bravo Victor, don't call or answer him back. This will only slow down the rhythm and ultimately take you longer to make a QSO or contact. Finally, always give your full call. Giving your last two only causes the DX to have to ask the rest of your call. If you give your full call, the DX can get everything in one exchange and ultimately put more guys in the log. And that's the goal, getting into the log. So, in conclusion, with the sunspots starting to make their reappearance, some great DX is starting to show up on the bands. 20 meters, for instance, is staying open past midnight. In fact, 20 has been great during the North American evening hours, which is during the sunrise in deep Asia. Remember the gray line. And best of all, you don't need a monster tower or antenna to work these guys. A simple wire or vertical will net some nice DX. Well, that's it for this month's column. I look forward to hearing your comments, complaints, or whatever's on your mind. If you have a story or opinion you would like to share, please send it to me at his call sign N0VD, November 0 Victor Delta, at dxcentral.com, dxcentral.com. So doing it again, N0VD at dxcentral.com. I'll do my best to include it in my next column. Until next time, see you in a pileups. And now, on Twitter as N0VD. This column was titled DXing 101 by Kelly Jones, November 0, Victor Delta. I have another interesting piece here on emergency communications and you, MCOM, and you. It's titled Never Stop Learning by Jerry Wellman, W-E-L-L-M-A-N. Jerry's call is W7SAR, Whiskey 7 Sierra Alpha Romeo. Last month, I called several public service agencies and talked with some of the top brass and with some of the line officers. They told me my amateur radio license alone doesn't cut it. I explained to one police captain that I had a license issued by the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, and had a properly programmed and certified radio as well. I asked, doesn't this qualify me for an important role with your agency in an emergency? Apparently not. For many years, I've been associated with the Civil Air Patrol, and I'll often meet pilots who make the same claim. They tell me that it's no big deal to go flying to find missing people and scour Utah's 10,000-foot terrain. In some cases, I agree. In other cases, I tell the pilot to be sure to leave a note listing his or her next of kin before they take off. When are we going to get past the idea that having some kind of government-issued license does not qualify us for specialized service? When I was first licensed as an amateur radio operator, I had to drive to Denver. That's uphill both ways in a snowstorm with bald tires. And take a test with questions which I did not know in advance. The test required a fair amount of study and preparation. There were no online practice exams. In fact, there was no online. Goes back a long way, folks. I say that not to diminish today's testing procedure or take away from any licensed amateur radio operator. Some operators have skills and common sense that make them well suited for emergency service. For others, an education process takes a little more effort. I know two or three local folks that are simply radio experts. If I have a question about grounding or about repairs or anything electrical, I know I can make a call and be completely enlightened. These are the folks who can diagram the most complex circuit on the back of a napkin in the local eatery during a lunch break. They just know their stuff. There are others with many years' experience and an FCC license who cannot solder a connector on a piece of coax. Even I know a few of those folks. Unfortunately, for those of us who are not genetically inclined toward electrical wizardry, It's a lot harder work to become technically proficient. It is the same for on-the-air skill. I have monitored two local public safety dispatches for years. They've changed departments a couple of times, moving from a local fire department to a sheriff's office and then to another agency. I've never met them and do not know their names, but I do know their voices and hear their skill as they dispatch. It seems they are usually on shift when major events occur. Maybe they're put on the desk when major events occur because they're the ones who are needed on the dispatch end when bad things happen. You can hear the skill in the voices of these dispatchers. You can also hear it in the voices of the officers or crews at the scene. They evoke situational awareness, and those in the field respond in kind. If you're in a bad situation, having an experienced dispatcher makes a huge difference. You know they're paying attention. You know they're doing all they can to have information available or relayed accurately and in a timely manner. If your heart is a little fluttery, the calm and seasoned voice of a dispatch center is just what you need to hear. It's not about the number of certifications and the number of training classes an emergency worker has. It's about willingness to be taught and willingness to learn. It's having a passion for what you do and going beyond adequate into the excellent realm. For some, the license or certification is an excuse to quit learning and quit progressing. That's why several friends with pilot's licenses won't have me as a right seat passenger. They've stopped learning to fly better, and they scare me. They are also the worst choice to send on a search sortie, as they pose a significant threat to themselves and their crew. The sad thing about the folks who quit learning once they have a license is that they do not listen when one tries to suggest training to them. Often our answer is to buy more radios or a newer aircraft in an attempt to show you how good they are. I guess to indicate that expensive toys somehow translate into better skills. I have yet to hear of an increase of talent with a purchase of a new radio. Often the opposite is true. A newer, more complicated radio results in worse operation because the owner didn't take the time to even learn how to work all the new controls and settings. Amen to that, folks. Never stop seeking ways to learn new skills and seeking ways to improve your skills. Once you've obtained an attitude that you know everything, you're probably not qualified to respond anymore. Well, folks, I love to read Jerry Wellman on his recording because his stuff is usually pretty good and pretty funny at the same time, very down-to-earth and real life. I'll finish with the last paragraph of his commentary. Sure, I'm licensed by the FCC to do radio stuff. The license didn't mysteriously endow me with knowledge or common sense or situational awareness. I'm still learning. It's an exciting process. Next month, I'll offer some photos of my new HF installation. I may only make a few HF contacts in the next months. The value is in learning something new. There is some personal excitement in knowing you're doing something right and not cutting corners. Until next month, best wishes from Salt Lake City, Utah. Jerry Wellman, W7SAR. Well, let's take a peek at some ham fests and special events for the month of August. In Colorado, the Denver Radio Club Ham Fest is August 16th. The doors are open at 8:30 a.m. at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds in Golden, Colorado. Camp Fest 2009 is August 28th, 1800 Zulu through August 30th, 1800 Zulu. That's international time at the Lake George Mobile Home Park, Lake George, Colorado. That's sponsored by the Mountain Amateur Radio Club. The talk in there is on 147.015 plus, 107.2 tone, if you have a 2-meter rig. Moving down to Louisiana, 4th Annual K5R Kilo 5 Romeo Special Event Station, commemorating the anniversaries of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, will be operating on Saturday, August 29th, from 1400 to 2000 UTC, that's international time, on frequency 14.250 and 7.250 megahertz. That's sponsored by the Southeast Louisiana Amateur Radio Club. QSL cards will be available if you ask for them. QSL cards are the little postcards that AM radio operators exchange with each other throughout the world. For this one, for the K5R, you could send a request to P.O. Box 1324, Hammond, Louisiana, L.A., 70404. State of Ohio, 18th Annual Columbus Hamfest, August 1st, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Aladdin Shrine Center on Seltzer Road in Columbus, Ohio. And in Vermont, the West River Radio Club Special Event Station, also August 1st, to celebrate Grace Cottage Hospital Fair Day. Their call will be W1RRC, Whiskey 1, Romeo, Romeo, Charlie. Let's take a peek at the 1010 International commentary for this August 2009 issue of World Radio Online. The Best Made Plans Don't Always Happen, by Gerald F. Gross, called WA6POZ. I'm writing this month's column on Memorial Day. If all had gone according to plans made last September, I would have been in San Diego celebrating my wedding anniversary and the wedding of our son. And rather than writing this column about amateur radio, I may have been describing the wedding ceremony, bride's dress, and party. But alas, the plans fell apart when our son and his fiancée decided that they may have acted in haste and called the wedding off. That was not the only plan that had to be changed this past spring. I normally drive my Blazer to Dayton because I transport all the materials needed for the 1010 booth. Last year I grumbled about the cost of gas and poor miles per gallon that the Blazer gets. This past March, my wife's car was rear-ended. She thankfully was not hurt, but the car was totaled. We purchased the 2009 Honda Civic Hybrid, advertised at 40 miles per gallon city and 45 highway. Thinking about what I'd get in the Blazer, I decided that I was going to take the hybrid. Was I surprised? Going to Dayton, I must have had a tailwind, 53 miles per gallon. Wow. Coming home, that tailwind was a headwind, 38 miles per gallon, but still double what the Blazer would have gotten. He only stopped for gasoline four times during the entire trip, compared to six stops with the Blazer, $75 versus $300 for gas. Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB, number 74181 from Lincoln, Nebraska, drove his 2009 Prius. If you have never been to Dayton, Joe is the individual who walks around wearing the cat in the hat hat. When I see him at the next QCWA luncheon, we'll compare mileage. Speaking about Dayton, this year we were a little disappointed. Our booth was moved again, and there was no 1010 forum. Both of these are important, as many of our members use Dayton to stop by, chat, renew their dues, or simply to meet fellow 1010ers. And when they can't find us, we both suffer. While I don't know the final attendance figures, I would guess that attendance was up overall. Friday was busy all day, Saturday was surprisingly slow, and Sunday was a typical very slow Sunday. Because 1010 Treasurer Keith Slotman, KR7RK, number 63324, and I worked the 1010 booth, we rarely attend any forums, so to attend any event during the weekend is a luxury. This year I was able to attend the ARRL donor reception on Thursday evening as Keith's guest. I was surprised by how many of the attendees I knew. I met and chatted with ARRL President Joel Harrison, W5ZN. On Saturday, with Keith as my guest, we attended the CQ Communications reception. This is purely a social event for the many individuals and companies who support CQ. Keith and I found a table, and to our surprise, seated to my immediate right were Laura Smith and Bill Cross, W3TN. Laura, if you haven't heard, is Riley Hollingsworth's replacement as FCC Special Counsel for Amateur Enforcement. Bill is a staff member in the FCC's Mobility Division. Needless to say, Keith and I had an enjoyable evening participating in the many conversations with Laura, Bill, and the rest of the members of our table. Here's a bit about the 1010 future events. The 1010 summer phone QSO party will be held on 0001 Zulu. That's 1 minute Zulu. 1st August 2009 through 2359 Zulu, the 2nd of August 2009. As is the case with all 1010 QSO parties, it is open to all. However, awards can only be given to paid-up 1010 members as of the date of the party. All other logs received will be handled as check logs. 1010 members should exchange call, 1010 number, name, and QTH, that's state, province, or country. Stations without a 1010 number should use 00000 as their 1010 number. For non-1010 members, this is a good time to make those initial 10 contacts necessary to obtain their own 1010 number. QSO party logs must be returned to the QSO party manager and be postmarked no later than 17 August of this coming month, 2009. For complete details, refer to the 1010 News, 1010 International Manual, or the 1010 Contest page on the 1010 website, www.10-10.org. That's T-E-N-T-E-N.org. If you're interested in 1010, the easiest way to obtain information about us is to visit the 1010 website at www.ten-ten.org. Everything you want to know about the organization is on the web, including a downloadable membership application form. If you do not have computer capabilities, you can receive a copy of the 1010 News by writing to us at 10-10 International Net, PMB 142, the address 643 North 98th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, NE, zipper 68114. We would very much appreciate you enclosing $2 to cover the cost of mailing. If you have been issued a 1010 number and have forgotten your number, send me an email and I will find your number. The 1010 number is issued to you as an individual and for life, regardless of the call or call signs you may hold. I would appreciate any comments or suggestions, so please send them to me, Jerry Gross, G-E-R-R-Y, Gross, G-R-O-S-S, amateur radio call, WA6POZ, number 21274, 10-10 President, 16046 Orchard Circle, Omaha, Nebraska, 68135, or email me at my call sign, WA6POZ, at 1010.org. Well, folks, this is Bob, your reader. We're just about up the time for the reading of the material from CQ that I can get into an hour format here on the Courage Handyham system. If you'd like to read or have read to you by someone else the entire text of World Radio Online, you can go to the CQ Magazine website. I'll give it to you. www.cq-amateur-radio.com. www.cq-amateur-radio.com. And it's easy to spot by the person that's familiar with the website page when you come up to it. And just click on that and you'll be able to download the entire magazine itself, even the many things that I just can't get into it yourselves or have someone do it for you. So that's the way it works. And if you haven't yet gotten into computerizing and you would still like to try it, even if you're impaired in some way that makes it difficult, you really should try to get someone to help you learn how to do it, because there's so much information more available on the internet throughout the world with people who can get on that magical box known as a computer. Well, this is Bob Zeta. I've been reading from the CQ Publications magazine World Radio Online for August 2009. If you'd like to get in touch with CQ Communications Incorporated, you can contact them either by telephone at area 516-681-2922, or you can fax them at 516-681-2926. They're located at 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Hand and Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any of these may violate copyright laws. You can reach Handy Hems at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyhem@courage.org. The website www.handyhem.org. Again, my name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. N1BLF, my QTH or geographic location, Dartmouth, Massachusetts. If you'd like to email me, you can go to n1blf@comcast.net. 73.